It's time for Let's Talk Legal with your host, Cecil Harbell and Wes Collins from the law firm of Harbell & Collins. If you've got a legal question, they can give you the answer. Call now, 1-800-818-2255, and let's talk legal.
And welcome to Let's Talk Legal with Harbell & Collins, attorneys at law, Cecil Harbell and Wes Collins in the studios with us this morning. You can join us as well. Our local numbers, 247-7282 and 353-4674. And good morning, gentlemen.
Good morning, Ben.
Morning, Ben.
We've been talking about the court system and going on up the ladder from the People's Court, the Magistrate Court, on up to Superior Court, and now we're kind of in that appeal process.
Right. It's taken us, about 4 weeks to get this far. We had one good call last week about a landlord-tenant issue. So hopefully we were able to answer that question well enough for that listener. Russell came in last week to assist in litigation support. He's in a mediation that he had to go to this morning, so he couldn't make it. But I think we're going to have him back next week. We're going to talk a little bit about bankruptcy next week.
Okay.
Cecil and I are going to wrap this, the litigation, road that we've been walking on the past three or four weeks up this week. But Ben, over the past several weeks, we have, started out at the magistrate court, small claims court, moved to district court, then up to superior court.
Basically outlining what the cases that originate in those courts.
Those are your trial courts.
Right. Okay.
Right. So we talked a little bit last week about, the timing with regard to how long it takes to get a case to trial, while it takes so long to get to that point. The fact that we don't have court at all times, especially in superior court in our district here in Eastern North Carolina. Also, we talked about the discovery process and the fact that, there's a 30-day delay as far as discovery being due, and then you're entitled to another 30 days. And then when you get the discovery in, it may not be complete. So, there are multiple reasons and multiple deadlines we're looking for as we go through the litigation process. This all really designed to allow both sides of the case to have ample time to be able to fully prepare for the eventual trial. As we've talked about before, it's somewhat of a funnel process. I mean, we start with the wide end of the funnel, and then we narrow down the issues as we get to trial. In order to do that, we have to go through this process, conduct discovery that's useful and fruitful to us, so we understand all of the issues when we get to that point. So the jury is not sitting there listening to everything, every bit of evidence, or even things that wouldn't be good, competent evidence at trial, but we're able to narrow it down to just the relevant and evidence that's relevant and material. So we talked about that last week. Now, then we got to the point where what if someone, a litigant, is not happy with the outcome of the case? Now, this may be
almost always somebody's not going to be happy.
But let's say that they want to appeal it.
Right.
Okay. So what is the process from Superior Court? What happens next when we're going to, the Court of Appeals? Well, of course, a notice of appeal is filed. That typically, in most cases, is going to have to be filed within 30 days of the entry of the order or the judgment or whatever you're appealing from. And then the Court of Appeals then considers all the evidence that was heard before the trial court, or at least the evidence that the attorneys put before the Court of
Relevant
Appeals.
Relevant to the appeal.
Exactly.
Right.
Exactly. It's not a retrial at all. We're not starting over. They're looking for errors in the law.
Yeah. Well, that's what I wanted to ask you. What about grounds for appeal?
I think it helps to back up here a little bit. And we're at a clear dividing line in American jurisprudence, Ben, between, the trial court and the appellate courts. Appellate courts, as Wes just mentioned, do not hear evidence. They are like a panel, if you will. Okay. They are a small group of judges that people can relate to this in terms of the United States Supreme Court. Everybody knows that there are nine justices on the United States Supreme Court. This is typical of state Supreme Courts, the North Carolina Supreme Court or the Virginia Supreme Court, and also the court right under the Supreme Court, the Court of Appeals. They sit again as a panel of jurisprudence. Judges. They then review the facts of the trial court. They review the law that was applied. And they then write a written opinion. This is very interesting for our listeners to understand. People many times ask Wes and myself, they say, well, Cecil, what is the law?
Mm-hmm.
Well, you know, Ben, what is the law?
Yeah.
I mean, what is
right.
the law?
Right.
The law is not, the law is a case, an opinion
mm-hmm.
that has been written by one of these panels
mm-hmm.
and has been affirmed, okay? Maybe the Court of Appeals writes it first and then the Supreme Court of North Carolina affirms it, and that becomes a case.
Right.
That becomes a case, and it becomes a body of the law that lawyers such as West then cite to the judge. And they say, well, Judge, in the year 1965, in the case of Smith versus Jones, the North Carolina Supreme Court heard facts similar to this case
mm-hmm.
and applied the following law. And we want you to follow that case in this particular case now happening here in Carteret County.
The theory is if it was right then it would be right for this.
Right, correct.
Yes, so.
This is a fascinating angle, if you will, as
mm-hmm.
to jurisprudence and American jurisprudence, which of course came over from our forefathers in England. It's not so separately distinct from that. But we are in a wholly different category now before a panel of judges that write a written opinion
mm-hmm.
reviewing the facts and the law that was applied in the trial court.
Right.
Okay. Now, you know, not to bring attention, well, anyway, many of our listeners understand even recent cases in our community that have been heard before the North Carolina Court of Appeals and the North Carolina Supreme Court, where again, those courts in Raleigh are reviewing facts and circumstances and judicial decisions, judge decisions that were made
mm-hmm.
in our local court.
Mm-hmm.
And they then decide whether or not the law was appropriately applied. They have, as Wes will explain, they have a whole series of things that they can do. They can affirm the decision of the trial court. They can reverse the decision and send the case back
mm-hmm.
for retrial.
Right.
Which
the Big Rock fishing tournament is one that a lot of people around here follow. Gets a lot of phone calls on that, and that's one that's been sent back.
That's one of several. And mm-hmm. there they sent it back and said, okay, guys, we want you to go at this again.
Yes.
We're not quite satisfied with the way in which the law was applied in this particular case.
Mm-hmm.
And so send it back and let it go again.
Mm-hmm.
Now, that's kind of the background, if it helps for our listeners to know where we are right now.
But as you mentioned, Wes, too, someone's not happy with the outcome. But you just not being happy is not going to be cause for appeal, though, is it?
Absolutely. You know, it's you have to find some kind of error.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's not a situation where, okay, I don't like what the jury decided on this factual issue.
Mm-hmm.
For example, a lot right. of the things that the juries are deciding are like credibility. Do I believe this person or that person? Well, the Court of Appeals is not going to touch the opinion of a jury as it mm-hmm. relates to, you know, who they believe as far as their testimony goes. That's not the purpose of the Court of Appeals. But if there was absolutely no evidence whatsoever to support that position, okay,
right,
then maybe the Court of Appeals would look at that and overturn that. If there was an error in the law, sometimes you deal with situations where maybe the trial court judge gave an improper jury instruction, and maybe they found that was reversible error.
Mm-hmm.
There, a lot of times we're looking at evidentiary things, like maybe there was some testimony that was allowed in that shouldn't have been allowed in. Maybe it's because it's barred because of the dead man statute, which mm-hmm. you is a situation where if someone is deceased, you can't testify about what they said you're testifying in your own best interest
mm-hmm.
with regard to
right.
what they said, if you have a direct pecuniary interest in that. And maybe that was allowed in. Maybe the Court of Appeals will look at that and say, no,
mm-hmm.
go back. Or maybe they'll say, well, that was allowed in, but it didn't affect the outcome of the case.
Right.
But Cecil brings up a good point, because this area of the law in mm-hmm. the cases is something that, you know, I think most people who aren't attorneys don't really fully understand. They know that there are cases out there, but how do attorneys use those cases to determine or to litigate cases?
Mm-hmm.
Well, a lot of times, Ben, you know, when we get a case in and we have maybe a client who comes in and has a unique legal issue that we're needing to look at, then before we make a decision as to whether we're going to get involved in the case, we research it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we research these cases. We're looking at all the cases in North Carolina and in this district. We're looking at the state cases. Sometimes we need to look at federal cases depending on what kind of case it is, what kind of case has been brought to us. We don't just jump into the case and think, oh, we think we're in the right place here. We've got to do our research. And the precedent that is now, you know, we have 100 or so years of history here with regard to our precedent is what directs us as to where we're going to be on a certain case.
I mean, I would imagine it's rare, but what about if you don't find precedent, yet you still think the law is not applied correctly?
Well, it is. That's a great question. And sometimes, like I said, you have to look outside the jurisdiction. You might have to look into, you know, even other states.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes, you know, maybe you see that New York has dealt with this particular situation in a certain way, and they have more recent precedent than us.
Mm-hmm.
And North Carolina, for example, is just lagging behind.
Mm-hmm.
Well, we might, under those circumstances, depending on all the material aspects of the case, the amount of controversy, how much the client wants to spend, because, you know, we're talking about making law here.
Yeah, right. Yeah.
It can be very expensive to do those kind of things. Then we may, you know, advise the client, let them know, hey, we've got a problem with this case or this line of cases in North Carolina, but we think the Court of Appeals, if it gets, you know, up to that point, would look at this favorably for us, but it's going to take, you know, a lot of work to get to that point.
Ben, I think it's interesting, and we don't oftentimes get into kind of the philosophy of law, if you will, but we seem to be in that today, or certainly I am this morning for some reason. Maybe it's the weather outside. But there are terms for this. First of all, if there is no case, if there does not seem to be a body of law that is consistent with the facts, it's called a case of first impression. And if there is a case that is very similar or almost identical, the lawyer will argue to the court, to the panel, that this is precedent.
Right.
Now, these are words that all of us have heard. Okay, precedent, or a case of first impression. Our listeners might wonder, why is it that the Supreme Court of the United States, we hear that it will hear the following cases.
Right.
But that it's not going to hear those cases. In other words, we hear on CNN or wherever we're reading, you know, well, the Supreme Court has elected to take up the case of certain circumstances.
Right.
Again, what is happening with these panels of jurisprudence type lawyers who have become appellate judges, is that they are very interested in developing, as Wes was just saying, the law.
Right.
Because they know that their cases become the law. And they are not, they're going to take up cases that they think that it's important that there be clarity on certain issues. And they're going to deny cases where they think that, well, the law is sufficient. We're not completely concerned about the fact that there's not clarity on that issue. We think that most of the time the reason they don't take the case up is because the lower court, the Court of Appeals, if you will, has made a decision that they agree with.
Right.
That they think is fine for now. We're going to let the lower court decision stand. But if for some reason the higher court thinks that it's time to clarify, define, make law, then that's when they will take the case up and they will then write an opinion, and that is then indexed for all of we lawyers and all of those law students out there and all those law schools to read. And that becomes the precedent.
We'll have more to come in just a moment here with Harvell and Collins, Attorneys at Law, on the web at harvellandcollins.com and open for your phone calls, 800-818-2255. Welcome back to Let's Talk Legal here on the Talk Station, FM 107 and AM 1240. Thanks for joining us here today with Cecil Harvell and Wes Collins from Harvell and Collins, Attorneys at Law. And we're talking about the appeals process. And, you know, we talk about the briefs and written. Are there ever oral arguments before the Court of Appeals?
In a very small percentage of the cases, mostly the Court of Appeals will let you know if they want to hear an oral argument.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I've had multiple appeals, many dozens of appeals, and I've only had maybe three mm-hmm. oral arguments, I think, up in Raleigh before the State Court of Appeals.
And even then, are they narrowed down to a particular point they want to hear an argument about? Or
You never know.
You never know.
You get up there and you're prepared to speak for your allotted amount of time, and then uh-huh. the Court of Appeals starts asking you questions, and sometimes you're wondering, where are these questions coming from?
Right.
You know, so you just don't really know exactly what's on their mind.
I think what I was getting at is, because I know when Russell was here, we touched on it last time, the importance of being able to write a good brief. I mean, to be able to write well and persuasive.
Very
right?
important. You have to be able to interpret these cases. You have to be able to distinguish the other side's cases from the facts.
Mm-hmm.
You have to be able to write in a way that is concise, that gets to the point, but puts, you know, forth the issues in a way that the Court of Appeals can really get to pretty quickly.
Mm-hmm.
That's very important, because the majority of these cases are heard and considered based on the briefs, not on oral argument.
You mentioned about the types of decisions that can be made. Obviously, you can have a unanimous decision one way or the other, or a majority decision.
Right. And, well, the Court of Appeals really has a broad selection of options as far as what they need to do with the case. I mean, they might, like Cecil said, remand the case back mm-hmm. for further proceedings consistent with this opinion, whatever that opinion might be. They might, in most cases, they're going to affirm what the trial court did. In mm-hmm. most cases, the Court of Appeals, you know, really tries to do that, I think. Sometimes they'll reverse the decision, and require a new trial. You know, so there's a broad spectrum. But from a technical standpoint, I think the next question would be, well, how do we get to the Supreme Court?
Right.
I mean, we've been talking about the Court of Appeals, in which the North Carolina Court of Appeals is the first step to an appeal in the state of North Carolina.
And it's a three-judge panel, right?
Right, exactly. And the way that works, basically, is that, you know, once we get our opinion back from the Court of Appeals, if it's a unanimous decision, 3-0 decision, then in order to get up to the Supreme Court, you have to file what's called a petition for discretionary review. And then the Supreme Court considers that PDR and makes a decision as to whether they're going to take this on and consider it, notwithstanding the unanimous decision of the Court of Appeals.
I bet that's rare.
That's even, I mean, you know, I say very few cases, mm-hmm. you have the trial court overturned. Even fewer cases you have the Court of Appeals than considered, and their decision mm-hmm. considered by the Supreme Court.
More so, likely on a 2-1 vote than sometimes.
Well, that's the next level. In the event you have a dissent, if you have a 2-1, you have an automatic right to mm-hmm. the Supreme Court. Simply have to file that election to then proceed with your appeal before the Supreme Court. You brief it. They already have the record. Mm-hmm. You don't have to do all the record preparation, all those things. But you do brief it to the Supreme Court, just as you did with the Court of Appeals. The briefs may look very similar, mm-hmm. But depending on the opinions of the Court of Appeals, you know, you're going to change some things, you know, because you're going to focus on some of the items that maybe the Court of Appeals has looked at mm-hmm. in their opinion. So, you know, you're going to brief that, and then you do have oral argument before mm-hmm. the Supreme Court. And then you have the full panel that comes in as soon as the bell rings, whatever time it's supposed to start.
Mm-hmm.
And it's very formal, as you would expect.
Right.
And it's time for oral argument when that begins.
Okay. So, again, we're kind of got that funnel keeps on getting a little bit more narrow, doesn't it, to
right.
down to a final one. And so we'll wrap that up in just a moment here with Let's Talk Legal with Harvell and Collins, Attorneys at Law. Remember, you can go on the website at harvellandcollins.com, listen to past shows, find out newsletters, lots of great information there, too. And you can call for that appointment at 252-726-9050. That's 252-726-9050. And more with Let's Talk Legal, part of Coastal Daybreak on Tuesday mornings right after this. Welcome back to Let's Talk Legal with Cecil Harbell and Wes Collins of Harbell and Collins Attorneys at Law every Tuesday morning here on Coastal Daybreak, talking about the appellate process here. Mm-hmm. And now we're up to the Supreme Court and making oral arguments there, too.
We are. And just one more bit of information for our listeners. Maybe some are out there really enjoying this program today in terms of, you know, the historic jurisprudence that we're kind of talking about. We, of course, Wes and Russell, have been up to these appellate courts many, many times. And we tend to do our own work relative to them.
Mm-hmm.
But if we had some case that was of historic significance in our law firm, we haven't had that. Mm-hmm. But if you were to have such a case in a law firm, one other bit of information or tidbit, demystification, if you will, Ben, is that, you know, there are lawyers that just do appellate briefs.
Right.
There
right.
are attorney firms that is all that they do, is write briefs on significant and argue cases on significant appellate issues. Again, developing new and significant jurisprudence for the country and for the state. And so there are appellate lawyers that just, this is what they do.
Mm-hmm.
And this falls into what you were alluding to earlier, Ben, about the writing, legal research and writing. That is a, that is an art. You know, again, for Russell and Wes to write what they think the court can hang their hat on, the other cases in the jurisdiction that are similar, that the court can use, change ever so slightly to make new law or to affirm what happened in the trial court here in Carteret County, things of that nature.
Mm-hmm.
But that's an art, to be able to sit down and write appellate briefs, in a successful manner.
Yes, and again, those old debate courses certainly come in handy because you have to be able to argue both sides really to write a good brief, I would imagine.
Yeah, no question.
Have to understand it. But with the state Supreme Court, I think we think of it with the U.S. Supreme Court, but with the state Supreme Court, are you looking at state constitutional issues usually, or is that by the time it gets there?
Not really. I mean, it's not necessarily a constitutional issue. I guess everything eventually comes back to the Constitution to a certain degree. But, you know, it could be a negligence case where they're just looking at an issue of an evidentiary issue.
Mm-hmm.
It could be a breach of contract case. It could be one case I took up to the court to the Supreme Court here recently was a case regarding reformation of a deed. We went from the trial level to the Court of Appeals. We got a dissent. And then we went to the Supreme Court. Now, in that case, the facts were totally in our favor. We had the witnesses lined up, but we knew we had a little bit of an issue with the case because the law wasn't all that clear as to whether you could reform a deed with the facts we had.
Mm-hmm.
We had one case that had arguably a holding in it that helped us, but we had to ride that pony all the way up to the Supreme Court. And when we got to the Supreme Court in that case, the Supreme Court established in the state of North Carolina that you cannot reform a deed based on these facts.
So, unfortunately, our case
established that in North Carolina. In other cases, in other states, they do allow reformation on those type facts. So that's a good example of how the Supreme Court, you know, lays down the hammer and sets the law on issues like that.
If you want to find out more, you want to call on the folks at Harvell & Collins at 726-9050.